everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 134. Yes, this is the 134th edition here at the Caffeination. We'd like to say hi and how are you, and thank you to all the people who are returning to listen to the show yet another time. Whether this is your second or 134th time listening in, we thank you very much for your valuable time. And if this you're new to the Caffeination, we'd like to say hi and welcome to you. We are a show that's all about coffee and technology, maybe not always right at the same point in time, all about coffee, caffeine, the whole nine yards in that. We like to try and consider ourselves a laid-back show. I have a general easy-going delivery throughout the entire thing. No shock jocks or anything like that around here. We usually try and play some good pod-safe music, and you can expect some of that, too. So if you're listening to this show over at the Tech Podcast Network, then you can find it at www.caffination.com. That's caffeination.com. And if you find anything interesting in the show, please feel free to drop us a line at caffeination@gmail.com. All right, now that we got that out of the way, figure we'll tell you why we're calling this show the Carefully Edition. It seems that I've been having some audio issues, and I haven't been really able to pin them down. One of our listeners actually sent me in a whole bunch of time signatures. Thank you very much, Michael, for your help in that one, and thank you very much, Tim, for doing the same thing. What we're trying to do is we're trying to pinpoint where things are going wrong and things are going screwy, and for some reason for the last couple episodes there's been some offbeat hijinks going on with the audio as well as the news, so we're really trying to make sure that doesn't happen again. We've reduced the chance of that happening by fixing a couple things before the show, so hopefully everything will work out correctly. Right off the bat, we'd like to talk to you a little bit about our sponsor. This show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. If you're looking for a better way to present or work together during your conference calls, your solution is simple. Web conferencing with GoToMeeting. During your call, everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com, and your computer screen will show up on their monitors. It's like you're all in the same room. GoToMeeting is perfect for sales or product demos, trainings, or real-time collaboration. Plus, you're not charged a permanent fee like some of the other providers that are out there. You can meet as often as you want for as long as you need. With GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime without ever having to leave your office. You not only end up saving boatloads of time, but some money too. So you can see for yourself, you can try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast. All right, we'd like to thank GoToMeeting for actually helping us out with the show, for helping out with the bills and everything else like that. We're trying to limit the amount of advertising, so if you head on over to the website, you'll only see the text ads on the one side and then the sponsored pieces of software down at the bottom. What they are is basically Firefox and the Google Pack. They're pretty much the only things that I would heartily suggest people give a shot to. So other than the GoToMeeting ad and the text ads, we're trying to limit the inclusion on your screen, trying to limit the time your eyeball spends avoiding the ads. So thank you everybody who's clicked on the ads. It helps us out, believe it or not. Let's see what else we got going for you today. Oh yeah, today we're returning to the PodSafe music. We had a groundswell of positive support for the PodSafe music, so we're going to go back to that. And we figured what better way to do it than a slightly topical song, although the gentleman who wrote it probably didn't think it so at the time, because the event that I think it discusses is it'll happen just a little over a week ago at the Indy 500, but we'll get to that in a minute when we get into the tech tidbits, general information, everything else like that. First off, we wanted to say hello to the Three Blind Mice, absolutely fabulous artists, both from the PodSafe Network, music.podshow.com, and from their own personal website at www.catsaway.com. So that is CATSAWAY.com. I have to be very careful when I spell things because I have a tendency to flip letters around. So that's catsaway.com. And again, this is the Three Blind Mice, and this is their song Dead Penguin. Let me know what you think of this one. I happen to find it a infectiously fun tune, so I hope you will do the same. Again, this is Dead Penguin from the Three Blind Mice.
Yeah.
Again, that was the Three Blind Mice and their song Dead Penguin from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com, and their own personal website over at catsaway.com. That's www.catsaway.com. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that. Like I said, they're actually very good friends here at the Caffe Nation. We've had great luck playing them before. They always write in. They always give their encouragement to the show. So we like to support them whenever we can. So you can head on over to PodSafe Music Network. You can check them out. I'm not sure if you can buy any of their tracks over there. I do know you can buy them from CD Baby, and I think they might even be on iTunes. I have to check their website again. Really good stuff. Very eclectic mix. I mean, there's no real way to pin down their genre on any one tune, but you could probably pin a genre to a tune, but that's about as far as you're going to get. They have a really good mix of the different stuff they put out, and it's always very professionally done and has just a tinge of humor in almost everything. So hopefully you would enjoy that. You head on over there and check out the rest of their stuff they got going on. So now this is a crazy little episode here. We are trying to do a couple of little things differently. We're trying to make sure that there's no mess-ups, there's no strange missing audio. Like that might have been, but nothing really. All right. And please, if you hear something weird, if you hear something going on that you know just isn't right with the show, then please feel free to email us at caffeination@gmail.com. Every once in a while, for some reason, my mixer or the cables or the mic or the whole setup here just has this weird distortion, which makes my voice sound kind of like it's like an evil robot, which is kind of cool, or a really bad cell phone connection, which is never good, or just it's like unbelievably staticky and horrible, and I usually have to end up going back and re-recording those passages, so I have to keep a real close weather eye on the waveform as it goes across the screen here. I might have to actually hook the second monitor back up to the computer just so I can make sure everything's hunky-dory when I'm taping. But you don't really care about that. You want to know all about tech tidbits and everything else. You have a little bit of general information. Last time we had Juiced going once. This time's Juiced going twice. And next time's going to be Juiced last call, basically. We have a couple little invites left. Anybody out there who is interested in Juiced, please feel free to drop us a line at caffeination@gmail.com. We'll gladly shoot one along to you. Second very good piece of news is air conditioner is back to go. No pleasure, no rapture, no exquisite sin is better than central air. That's Azriel from Dogma. He is very right. It has been rather unseasonably warm, shall we say, here in the Philadelphia metropolitan area over the past week or so. And on Memorial Day, the period in time where no repairman in his right mind is actually working, our air conditioner decided to die, committed Harry Carey out in the backyard. Luckily, Jen's father was actually trained as a heating and ventilation air conditioning guy some odd years ago. I completely, of course, forgot that. He came over, diagnosed the beast, so we replaced some parts, and everything's going well right now, but it's still kind of hot and muggy in here. We didn't get everything up and running and didn't start it until we got home from work today. A little bit of a miscalculation there. But hopefully everything will cool back down, and the boy is sleeping like a log tonight. He's been absolutely miserable the past couple nights because of the heat, so I think it's not the heat necessarily. It's so much the humidity. I hate when people say that, I gotta tell you. But alright, let's see what else we got going on. Last little thing we had here is 1,000 pardons for the audio. Yeah. And there's newer articles on the way, I swear. We have a whole bunch of stuff we'd like to talk to you about. Iced coffee drinks, different recipes that we got coming up for the summer and beyond. I just haven't gotten up off my rear end to actually get everything done. I know this is a horrible excuse, but it's been so hot and so sticky around here that I haven't really had the motivation to do much else other than take care of the boy and check my email. So we're running on empty with that when it comes to that. All right, might as well dig right on into tech tidbits. I mean, after all, it's only like 12 minutes into the show at this point, so figure you might want to get to the information you so horribly crave. All right, well, first up, you might wonder why we'd play a song called Dead Penguin here at the Caffe Nation podcast. No, it's not because I hate Linux. In fact, I'm loving the Ubuntu setup that I got running at work right now. Now, if you have no clue what that means, don't worry about it. It's just a kind of flavor of Linux. And if you don't even know what Linux is, it's a different operating system, basically. There's Windows, there's Macs, there's Linux, there's Unix, there's a whole bunch of different things. The main thing you have to realize with Linux is that there's different kinds of Linux. They might all be called Linux, but one's Ubuntu, one's SUSE, or SUSE as some people pronounce it, Red Hat, Yellow Dog, Slackware. I mean, there's time upon time upon time, different names that all these things are called. Each one slightly different. Each one has its own proponents and detractors, shall we say. But overall, I just started playing around with a new distribution, as it's called, new flavor in work. I'm very pleased with it so far. I'm actually learning a new 3D rendering engine that's on Linux. And by the way, Linux is free. That's what makes it so good. So I'm working around and learning a new 3D rendering engine in work right now, and that's called a Blender. It's kind of fun to play with. I actually made a stick figure today and a volcano. But you know, we're trying to get the students to use some new technology, so I figure I might want to learn what they're going to use before I do, before they start asking questions about it. But that's not what I came to talk to you about today here. I came to talk to you about a little bit of Linux crashes. Now, Linux is much more stable than Windows. So when you would say that the Indianapolis 500 actually had a car sponsored by Linux, there was a little Tux Penguin on the front of it, and that it crashed on the very first lap, and that it came in dead last, you might think that Bill Gates was out there specifically throwing spike strips in its way. But no, it just had horrible luck. The driver had finished very good up until that point. Also, the article that I have linked there, there was actually a car sponsored by Juiced as well. That one came in seventh. So I think it's better overall to be a slightly low-key sponsor, but oh my god, just the poetic injustice of it all. Linux touts itself as this fortress of stability, and what does it do? It's a good thing there was no car sponsored by Windows, at least that I know of. It crashes on the very first lap. Just a little bit of a dig at the entire world there right now. But all right, now, in case you didn't know, there's actually a new service up there from Google. It's called Google Streets. Now, depending on which news organization you like, you know, Fox News and CNN both have different takes on it, and there's a take that I hadn't even thought about this. Basically, Google Streets is in four cities in the United States: San Francisco, New York, and a couple others. I think Colorado and Seattle, maybe. I think it's Boulder, Colorado, not the whole state, I mean, obviously. Basically, you have your normal edition of Google Maps, and then you can click on it and actually see pictures from the street. Now, certain people are up in arms because, I mean, hey, there's strip clubs out there in the large cities, and there's people going into the strip clubs. Well, you're violating their privacy. Well, no, they were kind of walking into the strip club on a public street. But I can see where some people might get a little testy. Then there's some funny things that people have found. Now, the first one is actually an alien locator. Yes, I am dead serious. If you click on the first link over in the show notes and you look very carefully in the middle of the screen, you will see what appears to be the ghost-like image of E.T. standing next to a sign pole. Now, this is not some, you know, this could be just a mistake of the camera. This could be any number of things. But everybody seems to be picking this out and just having their way with it, having hilarious fun. I mean, for all you know, this could be a gentleman standing in the back with a very funky-looking coat on. But it's blurry, it's hazy, so you gotta watch out. And then there's another link we have over there at the Caffeination Podcast, which has the top 15 fun things that people have already found out about Google Streets. Now, people are up in arms, like I said, about the privacy thing, but they have things like, oh, well, look, here's a strip club and somebody's going into it. There's another guy feeding the meter outside of an adult bookstore. That's not the kind of stuff that I'm interested in. And although there's like a couple links for that, they have a couple photographic mess-ups. Like, there's one guy walking down the street who doesn't have a head. And that's basically because somehow during the time when he was walking from one photo to the next, you know, when they took the one photo and the next, his face got cut off, which, for some reason, people are again up in an uproar about that. They said, well, you know, you have people's pictures on one side, you don't have them on the other side. I mean, I personally think Google did not have any malicious intent. Oh, yes, we're going to have surveillance everywhere. They're thinking, all right, this person's going to San Francisco. They do not have a way around. They don't know where their hotel is. Wouldn't it be an awesome idea to give them an actual picture of the street so that they could see where they were? They could orient themselves. Yeah, you'd think so, but not so much. People are a little bit irritated. excited about it. So you can head on over to our website. We actually have the top 15 little fun things that people have already found. I mean, this thing's only been out for like 3 days. There's a street named after Steve Wozniak from Apple. There's a guy speeding, you know, the speed limit is 25, and then there's the Your Speed thing. There's some strange unmentionable void for some reason in San Francisco, I believe it is, at the corner of Howard and 6th. If you're looking southwest, there's a giant black square in the middle of the screen. They have a couple other photographic mess-ups. There's a giant pumpkin. There's a truck with a rather illicit advertisement on it. There's a homeless guy, people sunbathing, what appears to be a breaking and entering in progress. That one's actually kind of fun. That's number two. They actually see a guy climbing up the grate on the outside of a building in San Francisco, and he appears to have keys or a lockpicking set dangling from the back end of him. So, if I was that person and I found out that my house had been robbed, I would probably check Google Earth just to see if they had a picture of the guy. All right, now that's about enough fun with that. I'm not going to go all into the rest of it. Now, the next little article we have up here is the attacks have begun. Yes, our robotic underlords at this point are now attempting to become our overlords in an unfortunate, sad but true event. Apparently, there's a robotic lawn mower called the Dvorak Spider 01. No, not anything related to the other Dvorak who hosts CrankyGeeks.com, but apparently this is a remote-controlled RC lawnmower system there, and apparently somehow, unfortunately, it tumbled down a hill and landed on someone, and when a lawnmower lands on you, you're pretty much done at this point. There's a bunch of funny little comments in the section below the actual article, so it's basically, you know, Skynet meets Lawnmower Man. Next little thing we had up here, and yet another in the wonderful robot category. If you haven't gotten that drift, I love robots. I don't know why, they're just inherently cool, they're inherently awesome. There's just something about them. It's just like, wow, yeah, that this is a man-made, this is a man-made construct that seems to have life all its own. There's just something special about it. All right, well, the next up we have a cyborg machine. It basically makes, I don't know if this is actually a cyborg, but it's an article all about, these new robots that they're going to be using in the future of battle. They look like giant insects with wings, and they can carry destructive payloads on them and everything else. Just wanted to throw that out there. Thought they were kind of fun, and that mixed with the lawnmower killing is kind of a little bit of a scary situation. All right, so they're going to be hitting us from above and apparently on our lawn as well. Now, next up, a slightly related article. Apparently, the Department of Homeland Security has decided that they are tired, sick and absolutely tired, of thinking up situations in which the United States could be attacked, different security could be harmed. So what they've done is they've actually talked to a group of science fiction writers, science fact writers here, and what they're trying to do is they're saying, you know, it's like what they're trying to do is gain more information. It's like, all right, you guys are creative. We'd like you to come up with a scenario. How do you think the United States could be attacked? Personally, I don't think I'd want to be one of those authors, because let's just say on going out on a lark, you're the guy that comes up, hey, you know what they're going to do? They're going to do X, Y, Z, and B right in a row like this. They're going to attack Minneapolis, Minnesota. Then they're going to move down to Dallas, Fort Worth area. And then in a final coup de grace, they're going to move up to Albany, New York. Nobody will know what happened. And let's just say there happens to be some terrorist plot somewhere, some terrorist cell somewhere who has that exact plan in their mind. Some crazed guy over in some place that doesn't like anybody else decides that this is the perfect plan, and just so happens the two meeting of the minds, the two electrons, the two neurons pass in the middle of the night, and it comes to the Homeland Security. So they're all right. Like, they're looking at it. They're going, okay, this is a remotely possible, remotely plausible situation. Let's just look into it, and then boom, 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 things happen. What happens then? Do you eyeball the science fiction writers? Hey, well, he tried to warn us. Or do you look at them and say, hey, man, good guess? I mean, like I said, I wouldn't want to be in their shoes, because, I mean, how do you actually turn down a governmental association such as that? Yeah, you know what? I'm going to keep all my good ideas to myself, and just in case anything I write actually happens, it's not my fault. Let's just put that out out front. So let's see what else we got here. Oh yeah, another easy way to I don't know how many of you out there are touch typers. I myself am not. It's a secret shame as a geek I have. I type with the first two fingers on each hand. Basically, I've broken my hands so many times, and I always break either the pinky or the fourth finger due to a medical condition I had since I was a baby. But, you know, always in casts. My coworkers at my last job affectionately referred to me as Mr. Glass because I was always getting broken. So far, knock on wood, it's been a couple years, and actually from, I think, a stretch of time from 7th grade up until, so let's just say a stretch of time for around 10 to 12 years. For some unknown reason, every year in May, I would get injured. Now, this is May 31st, so I feel safe saying that I think I'm all right. So unless I fall backwards down the stairs after this show is recorded, you will know that the curse is officially broken, because this will be the third summer, again, knock on wood. I'm actually going to hurt my knuckles knocking on the wood so much tonight. This will be the third summer in a row where nothing has happened. So we're just going to assume that the curse is passed along to someone else and that I'll be all right at this point. But basically, I cannot touch type, but we're getting back to this. Now, why is this important? Well, there's a fun little article over at Gizmodo about a new USB gadget. Basically, the faster you type on your keyboard, the brighter this light bulb goes. Now, my wife is an unbelievably fast typist. She goes like 90 to 110 words a minute when she's really rocking it out. And especially if the passage that she's trying to type, she knows by heart. She does not have to look at the keyboard. She can either look at a piece of paper, she can look at the screen, she can do whatever, and just rock it out. So I could see definitely this being a slightly taunting device that would find its way to the Caffeination headquarters around here. But other than that, I can't really find any other use for it. I mean, there's plenty of funny little LED USB gadgets out there, rather, that I could see, okay, you might have a use for this, you might have a use for that. There's nothing that I can think of on anybody's green earth that there's actually a real use for this out in the field, other than to make me seem that much more inadequate. So we're going to move right along. And in the realm of bright ideas, how would you like to look like the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz? Well, you wouldn't? Well, how about this? Let's just say you are a celebrity and people are constantly taking flash photography of your face or whatever else happens to be exposed. Let's just say someone was going to make a spray called Blur. So it makes you unphotographable. Now, I just think this is a really crazy, awesome idea. Especially if, like, depending on the opacity of said spray, basically it covers your face in billions of little super reflective particles or nanoparticles that can mess with camera sensors and make whatever it's sprayed with a white flash. And there's a wonderful little picture over at Gizmodo.com, so you can really check that out. But it's just neat. It's just wonderful. It's the kind of thing that you don't really think of. Now, if they could make this into some kind of makeup, I'm pretty sure celebrities would never have problems with paparazzi again. So, but, you know, then until they found something else. So it's always a cat and mouse game. There's always, you know, a little bit of give and take. And for so long, the camera manufacturers have had headway and, you know, longer lenses, zooms. So this is just the tide turning in the other direction. Now, the place where I could really see this shining is for, like, anti-copying measures inside movie theaters. Now, what you do is you take the entire screen that the movie is going to be shown on and you coat it with these nanoparticles or whatever they are. And then you project from the rear of the movie theater instead of projecting from the front. So you have a slightly translucent movie screen instead of the opaque, you know, matte finished one. So by projecting from the rear, you would be able to avoid the particles, but anyone using a camera to try and take pictures would get nothing but a plain white screen. Now, this could be awesome, but I also don't know, again, how much it affects visibility. But, hey, just something I'd like to throw out there. So if you hear it happen anytime in the future, you know you heard it here first. All right, now, let's see, what the heck was this? Yeah, I have no clue why I put Ziggy Stardust in there, other than maybe it's a tiny little bits of dust, but still. All right, now there's a new product out from Microsoft, and usually this isn't anything to ooh and ah over, because, I mean, seriously, this is the company that gives you Excel. How much ingenuity do you think they have? But then again, they're the same company that gave me my Xbox, which is pretty cool, I must admit. So there's something out, you've probably seen it all over the news. It's called Microsoft Surface. Basically, it's a giant table. Now, what would you need a giant table for, except that it has a computer built in with unbelievable touchscreen technology? Now, I have three different links up there so you can go see it. One of them's from, one of them's from Joystick, one of them's from the Sci-Fi blog, and one of them's from Gizmag. Now, the Sci-Fi blog article has the absolute most pictures in there, has two or three videos in there, so you can really see what this thing is capable of. Basically, you take the iPhone, you take the multi-touch screen where you take two fingers or whatever and you manipulate objects around, and you expand it. You put Minority Report onto a tabletop. So imagine the old style tabletop arcade games, and then you put a really modern computer in there. And that's not even the cool part. I mean, you can touch it, and you know it's touch sensitive, and your fingers can draw across the surface of it, and you can organize photos and piles and everything, which is really cool and very visually impressive. But what impressed me the most is that you can take devices such as your cell phone, such as a Zune, for all three of you who have them. Put them on the screen, not plug anything in. There is no plug here. You drop it on the screen, well, hopefully gently placed, given that this is a very expensive piece of equipment, and then you can drag files across the desktop to where your object is located, so you'll be able to drag songs onto the Zune and have them loaded in. Unbelievable. Or one of the videos that I actually saw, which was great, like they had these at bars, let's just say, because a lot of the ones that are actually going out right now are going to be going to casinos and bars and hotels for concierge services. So let's just say you have a bar bill and they say, how would you like to split it five ways? So what you do is when you look down, you see all the drinks that were ordered in pictorial form or in little receipts or chits. And then what you do is you put your credit card on the screen itself. You don't swipe it. You don't, you know, have to organize anything. The guy just drops his credit card and then they drag what they want to pay where. How unbelievable is that? It's just so interesting, so new, and so fresh from a company that's rather stodgy if you really want to take a look at it. I mean, the only problem I have with a lot of the promotional shots that they have is that they're all in like people's living rooms. This is not going to be in your living room in any particular reality anytime soon. There are really cool things, like for instance the guy drugged digital tickets for a show. Like he put his cell phone on the screen. On the screen was a map. He clicked on one part of the map in the video and the theater popped up. He clicked on buy tickets, had his credit card on the screen, bought tickets, two virtual tickets showed up. He drugged them into his cell phone. Then a set of directions popped up. He drugged them into his cell phone. Then a contact number and he drugged the cell phone to that. So basically, in the space of, let's just say, 5 minutes, he found the theater, purchased tickets, drugged the tickets that he will use to enter the show onto his cell phone, not printing anything out here, and then contacted the person he wanted to go with. So, I mean, in all very new, very strange, very unique style. So it's something that definitely warrants watching, and I'd love to contact Microsoft and see if we can get them into our university, because I mean we have really cool stuff laying around all over the place, but I work in the architecture department and this is just screaming for that kind of use. Now maybe you wouldn't use fingers, maybe you'd have to use stylus or something like that for the level of detail that they would need, or maybe not. Maybe you could tune it that finely. But I don't know, I just see a whole lot of potential with this, and I'm really surprised at the source. So that's why I wanted to throw it out there. You can definitely head on over there and check out all the videos, or you could just search for Microsoft Surface, and you can check that out. All right, next up we have the, everybody's talking about the vampiric power usage for different electronics. Like, even though the fact that your VCR is off, it's still drawing power. Or even though the fact that your gorgeous HDTV plasma screen is off, everything's off, everything in your entire house is turned off, you're still drawing electricity. How would you like a master switch that's made in the shape of a house and has a giant, ugly power button in the middle of it? Well, there's probably a couple things you don't want to turn off, like the fridge and at least for us it's the fridge and maybe the air conditioner for during the day, but other than that, I can really see this working. Basically, it's a giant kill switch for your house. You click the button and everything shuts off. It just cuts power. I mean, nonstop, just bzzz, you're done. There's nothing else going on. There's nothing else you can do. It just slices and dices the power. Really interesting idea. I don't know if it's a concept idea, but I think it's just a little bit too much ahead of its time. There's certain things that need to be exempt. You should be able to exempt certain circuits, like have this on the majority of the things that you need in your house, while you have things like if you wanted to tape Columbo late at night, you could leave the VCR off of it. But that's probably a little bit more complicated than this. This is just the giant breaker a la the mad scientist layer for that. So let's see what else we got here. IQTP is the easiest way I could find to put that. Now, let's just say you're sitting in the bathroom, you're doing your business, you're waiting for whatever happens to happen, and you're sitting there, you didn't bring a magazine. Well, fear not, good friends, there's now something called educational toilet paper. It says, get smart during your relief. They have things like, there's 10 different puzzles that are imprinted onto it. So there's Sudoku, there's memory trials, word version, there's strip talking, I don't know what that is. There's memory trials, there's brain exercises, count the colors, more math, ladders, mental arithmetic, and stroop, whatever that is. So I wonder if the colors are semi-permeable, and I wonder exactly how easy this is to, you know, pull off. How quickly does it disintegrate? Because, I mean, it's all well and good to have, you know, reading material and time-wasting material that close at hand when you're a captive audience, so to speak. But if it doesn't do the job, if the primary function doesn't get done to most people's satisfaction, then it's not going to really take off. Although this is just an awesome idea. I could definitely see this taking off a lot better than the captive audience frames. I don't know, the guys out there are probably a little bit more familiar with this than the girls. But for a while there were these frames and bars that when a gentleman would stand in front of the urinal to do his business, the frame would talk to you. Now, there's no indication that when you walk up, this advertisement is going to start speaking. You just literally get the poop scared right out of me. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous because some of them were very crass, some of them were very loud, and some of them were very direct. It's like, hey, you're not going anywhere for a while. How'd you like to listen? And they're like, oh my god. And it's just I haven't seen one in a little while. I haven't been frequenting bars anywhere as near as much as I used to, but I haven't seen one in a while. And the next one I hear, I'll actually tell you about. But there were ads for cigarettes, cars, pretty much anything you can imagine. So this is much more along the other side of that. I could definitely see this one being a little bit more unobtrusive. However, if they're going to be printing word puzzles on there, you know the next thing's advertisements. So I don't know if maybe the cultural stigma of using an advertisement to wipe oneself clean would actually prevent advertisements from being placed on toilet paper. And in fact, I think that might be a really good idea. So this is a really good place to start with unfiltered content, so to speak. So maybe the next time you'll see a podcast on the toilet paper roll, but still. All right, next thing we have up here is probably one of the worst designed mice that I have ever seen. Now, if you've ever used a Wacom tablet or any kind of touchscreen tablet, you'd understand that, you know, just simply signing a document, little character recognition, a little bit of sketches here and there, these things are invaluable. So what? Okay, I have no clue what the cat's problem is. So if you heard that, sorry about that. All right, what this thing is a it's a normal three-button mouse. So it has the left, right, middle thing. And then in the middle, where the palm of your hand would be, there's a hollowed-out screen with a trackpad for a stylus. Now, of course, you're going to lose the stylus because there's no place to put it inside the mouse, which would be the first cardinal rule of touchscreen technology. You need some place to put your pointing instrument. Now, the second thing is it's only 1.2 by 1.6 inches, so it's not even big enough to spell out most people's names. So I could see that, you know, great idea in theory, will never work. So I just wanted to put that out there. Thought it was fun. Has a great promotional shot on the website. It's over at scifitech.com. But it's lacking just that little extra to put it right over the edge. All right, now, next thing up here, we have two turntables and an outlandish price tag. So you've heard of sticker shock. How does this grab you? $13,000 for a record player. Now, now this is the snarkiest article that I've ever seen in Sci-Fi Tech, but this guy basically says he doesn't get audio files. Now, frankly, I don't either. When you put it into this construct, but imagine this: you have a turntable. That's all it is. It's a delicately balanced piece of machinery for $19,000. They call it a moron magnet over at the Sci-Fi Tech blog. I can't see anybody actually purchasing one of these unless they have, again, we're going back to last show, far too much disposable income for their own good. And those people really need to start sending me money, because I don't have nearly enough disposable income to think about spending anything like that. Now, the other two links that we have here are actually unbelievably cool and simple versions of a record player, but they're slightly flip-sided. Now, basically, somebody took, this is a DIY, do-it-yourself, digital gramophone. So it's a upside-down inverted CD player with a tiny little gramophone horn, and the laser is actually on what would be the armature that usually touches onto the record. So you really have to see it to believe it. It looks like the really old-school RCA gramophone kind of thing. Apparently, the CD spins as a record normally would, and you drop the armature out directly over the middle, and the laser moves back and forth as it would in a normal CD drive. So this is just a really neat, really original idea that I kind of like it, and I hope they kind of mass produce this a little bit. I mean, yes, it's quirky, yes, it's silly, but I mean, this is honestly just a very small speaker and a CD player. So I could see them throwing this out there for like $15, $25 and making a mint on it because the parts are so dirt cheap. But, you know, hey, I don't know. It's probably coming out for like $50. And again, they'll try and go for the audiophile market. But yeah, that's not what you're looking for here. I mean, first of all, no self-respecting audiophile would stoop to playing a CD. But still. All right, that about wraps it up for the tech tidbits here today on the Caffeination. We have just a little bit left, and then we're going to send you on your way. We have a sneak peek at some of the upcoming recipes. One of the things that I'd like to pass along to everybody that I've been finding unbelievably refreshing this summer so far is don't just start drinking water. Plain water is all well and good, but what you need to do is if you can handle it, take just a little bit of lemon juice and put it in the water. Now, I used to do this when I was working in archaeology just because it replenishes just that slight bit of electrolytes. It gives you that slight little bit of taste that when the water actually hits your stomach and it's nice and hot out, you're not going to get bad acid reflux. You're not going to, I mean, if you can handle that flavor. And there's no sugar in it, there's no salt, there's no calories from what I've seen, at least on the informational label on the thing, just because you're using such minute amounts of it. Now, it's the same thing as dropping a slice of lemon into your water, but just when you're going out for a hot walk or something like that, trust me, it's much more refreshing than plain water alone. So just give it a try, just a plain cup of water, plain cup of ice water or whatever else like that, just a couple drops of lemon juice in there. Trust me, you'll thank me for it. It's an unbelievable way to beat the heat. Now, next little thing we had here is Cool Geek Tech. All right, this is actually putting a little bit of geek in your drinks. It's a way to create, yes, these are actually Tetris ice cubes. Now, they're just giant ice cubes that seem to be fused together and then colored for different purposes. But still, it seems to be worth a mention on the show just because I thought it was funny. So hopefully you will too. next up on the little food fun little side here, we have Nasty Pepsi. Not Naughty Pepsi, I mean, come on. But Nasty Pepsi, apparently, not many people know this, but different products, when they go around the globe, they have to shift slightly. For instance, all the customers here in America, most people around here are very familiar with a flavor of ice cream called chocolate chip cookie dough. And most people are very fond of said flavor. However, you know, we learned all about this in anthropology, and it's weird when you see it in practice. But for instance, when they ported that flavor, when Ben & Jerry's ported the chocolate chip cookie dough over to England, it flopped. Apparently, nobody over there eats cookie dough, or maybe chocolate chip cookies were not as big of a rage as they are in the United States. I don't know, and frankly, the guys at Ben & Jerry's didn't know either, but they had to discontinue that flavor. They might have since reinvented it. They might have since reintroduced it. But there was a period of time where you could not get chocolate chip cookie dough, a very common flavor. In fact, this is Ben & Jerry's most common flavor. could not get that over there. So there's other strange examples. Like, I believe in China they actually have a Cheetos with a fish flavor. And this goes right along with this, because this is the strangest Pepsi flavor that I have ever seen. And this is coming soon to Japan near you. The only one and only Japan. I think that's the only place that this thing's going. So if we have any listeners from Japan, I would love to hear your review of this. And as to whether or not you found it pleasing, if this is an odd taste to you. Yes, this is Pepsi Ice Cucumber. Gonna let that one sink in. Pepsi Ice Cucumber. Now, first of all, Pepsi Ice, I could see those two words can kind of work together. Ice Cucumber, that almost sounds like a Bath and Body Works scent, their flavor from them. I mean, I know they have Cucumber Melon over there, just because my wife tried that for a little bit. But Ice Cucumber and Pepsi, all in the same sentence, has to have something completely different. Some taste that I'm just not aware of. So just thought we should put that out there. Just no idea why that is the way it is, but just weird. Alright, so you need to, whoever thought of that one needs to put down the microscope and step away from the gene pool. And that goes the same for the next and last thing. How would you like a watermelon? Alright, most people I know like watermelon. There's a couple outliers to that. My father can't stand watermelon. He's probably listening to the show. Yes, Dad, I know you don't like watermelon. There's no point in you eating it. There are some people, however, who love watermelon. How would you like mutant watermelon? Yes, you heard me right. Apparently, somebody has found a way to create different strains of watermelon, specifically the Moon and the Star watermelon. The Moon and the Star watermelon is a purple watermelon with lovely tiny green specks so that it looks like the nighttime sky, light green. And then when you open it up, it appears to either be a deep red or a bright pink. I don't know what side of what microscope this guy was looking on. I don't know how many selective breeding processes one had to go through to get to this, but you need to take a step back, because that's just a little bit over the edge for me. All right, now that's just about it for the Caffeination Podcast. Hopefully you found today's show engaging, interesting, and educational to a certain extent. Please feel free to let us know what else you thought of today's show. If you thought we did a good job, please feel free to let us know. If you thought we left something to be desired, if you thought we left you wanting, please let us know that as well. You can find us over at www.caffination.com. That's caffeination.com. You can send us comments, feedback, suggestion, PodSafe music suggestions, anything else that you'd like to do, you'd like to converse with us, please send it to caffeination@gmail.com. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also proudly listed over at the Blueberry Network. That's Blubrry. It's a social podcasting network site, kind of like MySpace for podcasts. So if that interests you and you might want to check out the real MySpace page for the Caffeination, you can head out on over to myspace.com/caffeination. That just about wraps it up here for episode 134, the Carefully edition of the Caffeination. Thanks for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.